Pushkin.
Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do. That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill-building courses for you to choose from, because the steps you choose to take today will help you love what you do in the future. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
I'm Jacob Goldstein. This is What's Your Problem, the show where I talk to people who are trying to make technological progress. My guest today is Gia Schneider. Gia is the co-founder and CEO of Natel Energy, and her problem is this. Can you get all the good parts of hydroelectric power without the bad? In order to solve that problem, there are sort of two sub-problems that Gia has to solve. First, how do you build a turbine that can go into a river and generate power without chopping up fish? That, as you'll hear in the first part of the show, is an interesting engineering challenge. And then, in the second part of the show, Gia talks about a second problem to solve. How do you put dams in rivers without messing up the broader ecosystem? And I have to say, I found that part of the conversation particularly interesting. For one thing, it involves beavers, always fun. Second, and perhaps more importantly, that part of the conversation changed the way I think about rivers. So let's start with the happy. Why is hydropower great?
Yeah, hydropower is a great source of energy because it is reliable and predictable. What that means is that if I'm sitting here today and I'm looking forward at what I can expect to get out of my power plant over, say, the next day, the next week, I have a very good idea of what I will get minute to minute, hour to hour. And that reliability is really valuable in terms of balancing out the, you know, operation of a grid and keeping a grid reliable.
Right. That is not true, or not as true, importantly, of solar power or wind power, right? Those are more intermittent and less predictable. So those are reasons why hydropower is great. Why is hydropower bad? What's the problem?
So hydro is, the challenges with hydro or the negatives really come from the fact that the way in which hydropower works is by taking water and moving it across an elevation drop through a turbine. And to get that elevation drop, we generally have built dams. And those dams then change the way in which rivers flow in sometimes very material ways. And rivers are effectively the circulatory system of the planet. And so as you can imagine, as you start to like change those flow patterns, that has some real implications for the ecosystem around those rivers.
Right. So dams can mess up the rivers.
Correct.
And then the turbines themselves can be bad as well, right?
Yeah, the turbines themselves, they are amazing machines that have been highly engineered for high efficiency and performance. They are very outstanding engineering products. At the same time, they aren't very safe in many cases for passage of aquatic life.
They're like fish blenders in the middle of the river.
It's not necessarily always quite as bad as fish blenders, but yes, bottom line is you can kind of average it out and say like 1 in 5 fish through a conventional turbine generally won't survive.
So there's sort of two levels of problems. One is the dam and the other is the turbine.
Correct.
So let's start with the turbine problem. Just in the case of the U.S., what are the main fish of concern, species of concern? What fish are getting chopped up by turbines?
Well, there are many fish, of course. the species of concern that raised to the kind of top of the list from a human perspective, at least, are salmon, because salmon is a commercial fishery that has a lot of value. And eel is a more recent species of concern. Eel is less because it's a commercial fishery, but more actually because eel are a critical part of the life cycle for freshwater mussels. And one of the things that we've really started to understand in the last decade or so is that freshwater mussels are really critical to water quality. And we, as humans, care about water quality a lot, even if we might not care that much about freshwater mussels or eel.
So just to be clear, like if you put a turbine in a river and the eel get chopped up in it, the water quality gets worse?
Yes, bottom line. Yep.
And I've heard of, ladders and things like that for fish. Like, why didn't pre-existing solutions work very well?
So actually, we have focused quite a bit on getting fish upstream with ladders and have had, some degree of success with that for certain species. Eel and salmon actually are both able to navigate ladders of different types upstream, eel in particular, quite well. The thing that we had focused less on is how do we get fish back downstream safely? So actually building ways to get fish to move upstream is in some ways maybe a more accessible problem than how do you deal with getting fish to move safely downstream, where from a hydropower perspective, you want most of that water moving through your turbine because the amount of water going through your turbine is directly relevant to the amount of energy you create.
Right. So it's a difficult trade-off. You can either route the water around the turbine and then the fish don't die,
right,
but then you don't get any power because you routed all the water around your turbine.
Right. And so the interim mitigation that folks have started to explore is to put screens. So not just, so all hydropower plants have what are called trash racks to keep shopping carts and logs and all sorts of things that end up in rivers from going through the turbine. But those trash racks, will have, an 1 to 4 inch spacing. So quite a few things, fish, can make it through. So folks have looked at screens, but the problem with screens is that the finer the screen, the more likely you are to keep fish out. But the finer the screen, the more efficiency loss you have across the screen. The screen gets clogged.
The screen just gets covered in leaves and schmutz and whatever. Okay. So your notion is like, let's fix the blade itself. Can we make a blade that will generate power and not kill fish?
Exactly.
Seems hard. Like when you're setting out to do this, what are you thinking about?
So conventional turbines, particularly, probably most folks are familiar with, say, a wind turbine, they are circular in nature. And so what that means as they spin is the tips are moving faster than the center of the blade. If anybody's been on a merry-go-round, you know that. So one thought we had was because speed is directly proportional to the speed at which something hits you is going to have a relation to how hard it or how much it hurts, right?
Right. If you're a fish, you're more likely to die by a blade that's spinning really fast.
Correct.
That's what that means.
And so one way to change the ratio and have a consistent speed across the whole length of the blade is to, instead of having blades move in a circle around a central hub, to, if you think about taking the center hub and a turbine and splitting it in two and stretching it apart. It was a very different design.
Sounds very complicated. It's hard to picture.
Yes. And I think bottom line, we realized after a lot of work, we didn't need to do that. We could just make a better blade shape on a conventional turbine design. And, but that took quite a bit of work to get to that point.
How did you figure that out?
Well, the simple version is a lot of trial and error and a lot of, you know, experimentation. Where we ended up is actually, I think, a very simple and elegant solution, which belies the amount of work that went into it.
Often the case, right? Yeah. Like, it's easy once you know how to do it, right. But figuring out how to do it is hard.
Right. No. And the simple elegant solution basically it comes down to two things. One is that the leading edge of the blade itself is fairly thick relative to the size of fish interacting with it. And so and that is kind of intuitive. If you have a blunt edge moving through the water as opposed to a knife edge moving through the water, the blunt edge is going to be better for interacting with, like, things get deflected. Fish get deflected,
right.
Not sliced.
So, or if you think of it from the fish's point of view, like if you're swimming into a knife blade, that's going to mess you up more than if you're swimming into like a little wall, right?
Right. Like, or like a rounded wall or rounded corner.
Oh, rounded. Yeah. Rounded sounds nice.
Rounded corner. So that's one part. And then the other part is, and actually the physics around it are fairly interesting because that rounded edge creates a almost like an airbag, like a you can think of it like as a field.
It's like a water airbag.
Sort of, and it basically helps deflect stuff around the blade. So that part's good.
Stuff, including fish.
And then the other part was to solve that problem of the fact that the tips move faster than the hub, than the center. To do that, we then introduced a swoop forward of the blade. And that is, again, you know, a little bit of physics is what that, but the way to intuitively understand it is that if you're swimming through water and you get struck with a glancing blow as opposed to a direct blow, the glancing blow hurts a lot less.
Yeah, I want a glancing blow if those are my choices.
Right. Yes. And so by swooping the blade forward, it basically means that you don't have direct strikes. You have glancing strikes, and the energy of that impact is now dramatically less, and that leads directly to survival. So all of this is around the leading edge of the blade, and that's all tied up with fish safety. The rest of the blade shape is all about performance. Again, because we have to have high performance, high efficiency machines. And so the twin engineering challenges were this then balancing the shape on the leading edge with the shape of the rest of the blade so that we have a highly fish safe, you know, leading edge with a high performing rest of the blade.
Right. So now you've figured out how to not kill fish, but you have to make sure you can still generate power. It still has to work.
At, you know, 93% efficiency. These are very, very high performance machines. And then I think the other additional constraint that we face is a design approach that can design blades that are able to go into all of the existing hydropower plants that we have today. When we're talking about hydro, we're talking about dealing with a large existing installed base that we want to upgrade to be fish safe, which means we need to go into the existing concrete and all the other stuff that's there.
So this is essentially a replacement part.
Exactly.
You're not building a whole new system.
Exactly.
You're building a replacement part. So just so you figure out how to build this thing, and just tell me what does it look like to somebody who doesn't know about all the swooping and the wide blade? Just if you look at it, what does it look like?
It looks like a propeller, but with a very funky, you know, big, thick leading edge.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at it and I thought like, it just looks like a jet engine, kind of, right? There's like a metal cylinder with the blade inside of it.
Correct.
Like, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know how hard it was or that it doesn't kill fish if you looked at it.
That's
so
correct.
is there a moment when you test it? Is there a like, okay, we made this thing. Let's see if it kills fish. Like, how do you figure out if it kills fish?
We have a water tank and a pump, and we recirculate water through a set of pipes, through a turbine. Yeah. That turbine has a transparent housing around it, so we can take high-speed video, so we can see the fish as they go through.
That's cool.
See what they do.
And you just dump fish in and say, good luck, fish, basically.
Yeah. And then this is all very scientific, right? So we tag each fish that goes through the turbine. We capture it at the end. We inspect the fish before. We inspect the fish after. We hold the fish for 48 hours after they go through the turbine. We have a control population.
So traditional turbines, you said, kill about 20% of the fish that pass through them. What percent of the fish that pass through your turbine are killed by the turbine?
Less than 2%. So we have done tests that have 100% survival. So zero fish die.
So you got your turbine. It doesn't kill fish. And by the way, how does it compare in terms of efficiency? How is it at generating power compared to comparable turbines?
Similar. So it's not the case where we can always say that there is no trade-off. Some of the most efficient hydro turbines out there, you know, approach efficiencies of 94%, 95%. I think right now we top out at around 93%. So for the most efficient, there will be some turbines that are a little bit more efficient. However, when you think about prioritization of fish passage and you think about a very efficient turbine, but now you need to put a screen in front of it, you end up with net delivered cost of energy relative to fish safe performance is definitely better when you can pass fish safely through a turbine, even if it's 93% instead of 94% efficient.
So you got your turbine, it works. Where are your turbines in the world today generating energy?
Today, we have three projects installed, one in Oregon, one in Maine, and one in Austria. And
are these like pilots? Are these like big utility scale? Like, are they like, what is the nature of these three?
They're commercial installations. They are generating electricity connected to the grid. We're looking at things in Virginia, in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Switzerland, France. And now most recently up in Ontario. And I should be very clear, these are all deals that we're working on that are not yet closed with a couple different utilities. So I think what we are, I think really at an interesting tipping point from a commercial perspective, where the industry is finally realizing that there is a way to upgrade all of these old assets, maintain or actually improve in some cases the power output simply because we're replacing really old turbines with new turbines and the new turbines are higher performance. And do so without killing fish. And at the end of the day, our value proposition simply is, if you're going to spend billions of dollars on equipment that's going to run for 40 or 50 years, and you could put in a conventional machine, which will kill fish, or a machine that is not going to kill fish, why would you not choose the machine that is not going to kill fish?
Are there regulatory requirements that make it that sort of push utilities toward choosing your turbine? I mean, is it like if they don't choose your turbine, then they have to put in a really fine screen and it's going to be worse for them anyways?
That's correct. Yes. I think where we're seeing the most immediate uptake is places where there are regulations for safe passage, which require either putting in a screen with a bypass. So you generally are reducing energy because you're putting more water around the turbine instead of through, in addition to the screen, which adds to cost. Or in some cases, you're having to shut down at night for 3 or 4 or 5 months out of the year while fish are moving, things like that.
We'll be back in a minute to discuss GEO's long-term problem. Once you fix turbines, what about dams? How do you put a dam in a river without messing up the ecosystem? Part of the answer, it turns out, you ask yourself, what would beavers do? You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend. Okay, 10 seconds. How many things can you name that are always growing? The universe, easy one. My kids, so far. To-do lists. This month, my sugar snap peas. I know that's not always. I know I'm out of time, but I'm going to give you one more. Businesses on Shopify. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. There are key moments in every endeavor. I ask pretty much everybody I interview on this show about their key moments, their breakthroughs, their failures, their turnarounds, and Shopify can be there for you at all of your key moments. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/problem. Go to shopify.com/problem now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/problem. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now. There's another problem with hydropower, right? Which is the dams themselves mess up river ecosystems. And a turbine that doesn't kill fish doesn't solve that, right? Or it doesn't solve it entirely. What are you going to do about that one?
Yeah. Well, I think the answer is multi-layered. And in general, our view is that there are certain existing dams today that make sense to be removed. That's a position that I in general, I would say that you'll find that to be a position across the industry. There just are in some cases stuff that we built in maybe even 100 years ago that just don't make sense to keep in today, and they should be removed.
It's a basic cost benefit. Like, it's a high ecological cost. It's not generating that much power. I mean, is that the basic calculus?
Or it's also just a high operations cost. So just it's a combination of commercial and environmental factors driving the decision making. So the next layer after dam removal is what we think of as reconfiguration. So if I have an existing project, it makes sense to stay in economically. It's a good asset. But maybe there are some things that I can do in addition to putting in fish-safe turbines that will improve the upstream passage by having a better bypass or a more naturalistic upstream passage zone, for example.
Okay. Those are reasonable, but you have this big dream. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the big dream is what we call Restoration Hydro, which is to go full stop in taking the lessons learned from river restoration over the last couple decades, take inspiration from nature's engineers, which are beavers, which do build dams. And what's fascinating when you look at beavers is that you can find beaver dams that are very large, hundreds of feet long, 15 feet high. You can find beaver dams that have been around for a century. They can be very persistent. And what's interesting when you look at those structures is they actually have very positive impacts on the river ecosystem with respect to groundwater recharge. They slow water runoff down. That helps get more water into the ground. That helps to benefit the water table. They create more habitat, more diverse habitat around in that particular part of the river reach, which is beneficial for fish. So the big picture dream is basically a nature-based approach to thinking about rethinking hydro, certainly for new build projects, but potentially also for reconfiguring more dramatically existing projects.
I get that beavers are cool. Like, beavers are indeed amazing. But I don't think I get exactly... I mean, are you just saying we should build dams like beavers? Like, I don't really understand
it's
practically
building dams
what,
that fit
what you mean.
Yeah. What the concept behind Restoration Hydro is to realize that what we see in rivers today is not the way rivers actually were in their natural state. Rivers in their natural state 200 years ago in North America were full of log jams, woody debris, beaver dams, all sorts of barriers to flow. And those barriers helped mitigate floods, because you slow water runoff down across the landscape. They help drive groundwater recharge. They have a whole bunch of benefits.
That's cool. So, like, when we picture a river and we just picture it free flowing, that's actually not natural either. That is the product of some amount of human intervention.
A huge amount dream of human intervention for navigation, for all sorts of reasons, right? We want to be able to drive a boat straight through the river.
So the dream is you sort of get a sense of what the natural dams might have been and build those and generate power from them. Like, that's the dream.
That's the dream. And the reality, of course, is it's going to be one step back from that because, you know, we live in an existing built infrastructure with a lot of stuff that we have to adapt. But I think that is a pathway that we feel pretty strongly we're going to have to go down anyway in the context of climate change. Because, you know, if we look at the increase in extreme weather events and precipitation events, both extreme floods and extreme droughts, the common problem is we're getting too much or not enough water in the, you know, at the wrong
time. At a given moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what dams do, whether they're man-made or natural, is help to spread water out across time and across space. And that is going to be a critical part of adapting to climate change, which we are going to have to do. We have a certain amount of climate change embedded in our atmosphere today. We are seeing it already. And so the view for us around Restoration Hydro is it's a way to start to blend this future of how do we deal with climate change from a water resource management perspective with also adding to the renewable energy supply.
It's cool. It's a cool way of thinking about the world that I had not thought of before. So I appreciate it's fun to have a new way of thinking about the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is critical for us in general, for everyone who's working to tackle the clean energy transition, frankly, because if you think about what we're doing, we are basically replacing fossil fuel resource extraction with something else. And that something else is not necessarily a world that is biodiverse. It's a world, like, I can fully imagine a world where we have made the clean energy transition. We are using wind, sun, and water and geothermal energy to power all of our energy needs. But in the process of doing that, we have mined the earth massively. We have huge industrial scale build out of everything.
Yeah.
And that's a world that is not necessarily very biodiverse, but is powered by clean energy. And so I think that one of the other reasons why I find hydro interesting is because hydro has 100 years of history dealing with and thinking about and having lessons learned of how can we can do renewable energy one way that's has a big negative environmental impact, or we can embed criteria that prioritizes biodiversity and environmental criteria. And we need to think about that not just for hydro, but for batteries, for solar, for wind, etc., across the board.
We'll be back in a minute with the lightning round. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. The automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
We're almost done, but first we have to do a lightning round, which is just a lot of questions, somewhat more random than the other questions I've asked you so far. For example, what's one thing you miss about Texas, where you grew up?
The farm, being on a farm.
Is it right that like you lived in a cabin that your dad built? Like I sort of caught glimpses of that, but what's the true story of that?
That is the truth. He drove to Arkansas, brought back logs, and built the house in which I grew up with the help of some local high school students. And so that is actually true.
Where are the tacos better, Texas or California?
Baja, Mexico.
Well, sure. literally where fish tacos were invented.
I think both Texas and California are fine. I've had equally great tacos in both places.
What's one thing you learned from setting up the carbon emissions trading desk at Credit Suisse early in your career?
That it is possible to move policy in a direction that supports environmental outcomes and aligns with the general like capitalist framework. So it is possible to do that. It takes a lot of thought, effort, and care.
What's your favorite river?
Oh, the McLeod.
Tell me about the McLeod.
It is an amazing cold, like super cold water river, flows into Lake Shasta. And so unfortunately, upstream migration is blocked at Lake Shasta. And we go there once a year, generally in the summers. It's a great trout fishing stream. It's just incredibly pristine, beautiful. It's just a beautiful place.
Gia Schneider is the co-founder and CEO of Natel Energy. Today's show was produced by Edith Russolo and Gabriel Hunter Chang. It was edited by Karen Chakurji and engineered by Sarah Brugier. You can email us at problem@pushkin.fm. I'm Jacob Goldstein, and we'll be back next week with another episode of What's Your Problem?
The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the unconventional awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored among some of the most influential leaders in industry. And me, I'll be there too. Enter now at T-Mobile.com/unconventional awards. See you there.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
If you're looking for a new podcast but don't know where to start, here's one you can add to your list. The Jordan Harbinger Show.
The Jordan Harbinger Show is aimed at making you a better informed critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening. Jordan talks to everyone from neuroscientists to CEOs to astronauts, authors, and performers. You might enjoy Jordan's interview with historian Yuval Noah Harari, the author of Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, or his episode with Fool Me Once author Kelly Richmond Pope on how fraud became a trillion-dollar industry. Whether Jordan's conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you'll find something useful that you can apply to your own life in every episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way, or it could just be discovering a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts.